Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pitt football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media.
Always are for an hour to talk Pitt sports here on Trib Live Radio, football, basketball, and recruiting. That's what we cover on the website, Panther-Lair.com, and it's what we talk about here on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio. And, you know, we're working our way through the 2015 schedule and previewing each of the 2015 opponents. Last week we talked about Youngstown State and got the inside, or an inside look at go. But as I was looking at the schedule, I started thinking about it a little bit, and I started thinking about those first two games of Youngstown State and Akron, and it really kind of made me realize that right off the bat, you know, right from the opening gun, Pat Narduzzi has a great opportunity to show that things will be different. I mean, you think about those first two opponents. You mean Connecticut in 2012, never mind Navy in 2013, never mind the Houston game this past year, although people will certainly point to that. Really, I think the two that will define it, the two that people will point to when they talk about the Paul Chryst era, they talk about the downside of the Paul Chryst era, the two are Youngstown State and Akron. Youngstown State at Heinz Field. I mean, those two are it. You know, if a Pitt fan is engaging in a discussion with another Pitt fan about whether or not Paul Chryst improved the Pitt football program or what he did or any positive impact he might have been, and one fan wants to put an end to that conversation right away, all they have to do, and there's not a lot you can say to try to make this case, and I have made this case, that Paul Chryst did a good job stabilizing the program or had a positive impact in his time at Pitt or did good things here despite what the final record would be. And if someone came up to me and said, "Well, that's interesting, Chris, but how about this? Youngstown State and Akron." I wouldn't have a whole lot to say to that. I wouldn't have a whole lot that I could say in response. I could talk to you about Ted's firing after, you know, the Haywood and Graham debacles and finally ending up with Paul Chryst. I could talk to you about how that team had a lot of personality issues and a lot of commitment issues, and guys weren't really sold on the team, sold on being part of it, and that was, you know, part of the issue with the Youngstown State game. I got nothing for their issues or anything like that. Dave Wanstead's 2005 Pitt team was a mess, and they beat Youngstown State 41-0. And that was a different Pitt team and a different YSU team, but still, that's probably what you should do if you play a team like Youngstown State. No disrespect to the Penguins. And I know last week when we previewed Youngstown State with the writer from the Youngstown Vindicator, win. That's almost a given, and it should be a given. Well, it wasn't in 2012, or at least we found out that it wasn't in 2012. And here, you know, and so that's what you have with the Paul Chryst era. That's what people will always point to. And no matter how far we get removed from the Chryst era, no matter how much perspective we're able to take, note from the start, Pat Narduzzi is going to have an opportunity to exercise some very specific demons by accomplishing the seemingly, I don't want to say simple, but less than supremely difficult tasks of beating Youngstown State and Akron. But it can be broader than that, though. You see, there's something bigger at play. There's something bigger at stake, and those two losses that stick out and almost define the Chryst era. He might even be exercising some bigger demons for this program. In the last 12 years, Pitt has lost to a team that wasn't in a power conference 11 times. Toledo, Ohio, Navy, Bowling Green, Utah, SMU, Youngstown State, Akron, Houston. Last 12 has Pitt gone through without losing to a team from a non-power conference. And I'm saying it at non-power conference because, you know, there were years when, you know, Pitt lost to Big East teams when obviously Pitt was in the Big East. But teams outside those power conferences, only twice in the last 12 years has Pitt emerged to Toledo and the Citadel and UCF. 2009, I'm even drawing a blank on who they played. I know they played NC State in the non-conference. That was the game that they lost, but they emerged unscathed. They did not lose a game to a non-power conference team in 2006 or 2009. I mean, how about that? And really, you know, you want to take it a step further. The 2006 season, when Pitt beat its non-power conference opponents, that season was doomed not by a loss to Youngstown State or Akron or anything like that, or Houston or Toledo or Navy. It was the loss at Connecticut. It was the worst loss. That was the game they should have won. And that's what really these demons are about for the Pitt football program. It's not just about losing to non-power conference teams. It's about dropping the bad losses altogether. I mean, think about it. Let's go year by year. 2014, Akron, Houston, tons of missed opportunities against Cincinnati. We can keep this list, though, to the non-power conference losses and Connecticut, because Connecticut seems to pop up as a bad loss for Pitt pretty often. And just point to SMU and UConn, Pitt beat UConn in 2011, but SMU in the bowl game. You say what you want about the Cincinnati game, it is what it is. I mean, that was a game between two very good teams. Cincinnati got the win, even though I know it stung. Cincinnati got the win there. NC State wasn't great that year. They had Russell Wilson, but NC State wasn't great, but that was on the road. That wasn't really a terrible loss. That was a pretty good year for Pitt. Was a terrible loss for Pitt. 2006, Pitt never should have lost to UConn, and they did, and that cost them a chance to go to a bowl game. 2005, the game at Ohio. 2004, Connecticut again. And then Utah, in the Fiesta Bowl, that's probably a bit forgivable. That's a non-power conference loss, but it's kind of terrible, miserable, forget your aspirations and set fire to your expectations loss. A loss that just chewed up anything you thought the season could be or wanted it to be. 1 year in the last 12 without a loss like that. It's such a common refrain with this program. Avoid the bad losses. Just avoid the bad. Do anything outrageous or, leap over tall skyscrapers or outrun a speeding train. Just don't lose to teams you're supposed to beat. And if Pitt could have just avoided those head-scratcher games last year, they probably would have been 7-5 at least, maybe 8-4 or even 9-3. And that's before you start getting into things like Notre Dame and SU, if not better. I mean, we're just taking the low-hanging fruit of games you're just supposed to win. You add those in, and you've got a whole bunch more 8-4 and 9-3 seasons and a whole lot fewer 6-6 and 6-7 and 7-6 seasons. So this year, in Pat Narduzzi's first year, he's got a chance to start it off right. Beat those two teams, which is something you should be able to do, and he'll already be ahead of his predecessors, or at least ahead of Paul Chryst, who never went undefeated against non-power conference teams. All three of his years, he had at least one loss to a non-power conference teams, to a non-power conference team. Get a bit dicey, but... And then again, you look at those 11 losses to non-power conference teams over the last 12 years, four of them have happened at home. Four were on the road, and three were in bowl games. So it's not like Heinz Field has been a huge advantage for Pitt in these situations. They lost four times to teams from non-power conferences, non-power conference teams at home. Here, the first step to making this program legitimate is to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You win those games, and a 6-6 season becomes 8-4. And you know what? 8-4... It's not 10-3 or 10-2. It's not 11-1, but 8-4 is legitimate. 6-6 is not. And the difference between the two is to win. Beat Youngstown State, beat Akron, and set yourself on a pace for 8 wins. You win those first two games and you got a real shot at winning 8 games in the regular season for the first time in 6 years. It's quite a way to open the season. Not to put too much pressure on it. Of course, it's still several months away, but it's quite a way to open the season for Pat Narduzzi. And as I looked at it in these two games and the tone that Pat Narduzzi could set, and it's funny to talk about it like this because what are we really talking about? We're talking about beating an FCS team and non-Power 5 conference team that went 5-7 last year. You should be able to do that. It shouldn't be too much to ask. But I always say, supposed to do. So if Pat Narduzzi comes out and does what he is supposed to do, then he's going to have this season and quite possibly the Pat Narduzzi era off to a pretty strong start. We got a pretty strong show for you today. Lots of things we want to get into. Of course, we're continuing our series. Remember, we're going to work our way through this summer previewing, breaking down and previewing every position on the roster. Tunes if you want to catch up on previous episodes. But last week, we talked about quarterbacks a lot, about the past, present, and future of Pitt's quarterbacks. This week, the focus will be on running backs, past, present, and future of Pitt's running backs. And then we're going to continue our 2015 opponent preview. Last week was Youngstown State. This week, we're going to turn to the September 12th game at Akron. We'll talk to George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal. Are they as mighty as the 2014 Zips were, those Zips who vanquished Pitt at Heinz Field? And really, what was just, just kind of an ass-kicking. I mean, Pitt really didn't put up much of a fight in that game. They got pushed around on both sides of the ball, and it was just a miserable performance. Now, is that on Pitt or is that a credit to the preview of what Akron looks like for this season? But coming up next, we will jump right into our position previews. We're looking at running backs, the past, present, and future. It's an interesting position for Pitt, been a pretty important one. Welcome back to the Panther Lair Show, Chris Peek. Publisher of PantherLair.com with you for an hour, as we always are, talking about Pitt sports here on Tribble on the Internet. And we're working through our, you know, it's only May, but if you really break it down, you just got so many weeks from now until the start of training camp in August. And it kind of occurred to me, you know, we need to start previewing this team and previewing this season. And so we've been going position by position with the 2015 Panthers. And last week was quarterbacks. We talked a lot about Chad Vojtěch. We like to talk for the future of the quarterback position. And this week, we're going to the running backs. And, you know, the present of Pitt's running backs is pretty easy. I mean, it's the deepest position on the team without really even hesitation. If you asked me to name the deepest position on the team, I really wouldn't stop and think too long about it. And I don't think you would need to either. I mean, this position is so deep that backer, those two guys are on the two deep. They moved players away from running back, and they still have really four viable options at running back. And that's just on the returning roster. They've got another guy coming in the summer. So without a doubt, the deepest position on the team, the strongest position on the team, and it's led by James Conner, who, you know, we all know hiding from it. I said it to him. I asked him about it prior to last season of, you know, I wasn't sold after 2013. I saw a lot of talent. I thought, I believed that he could be great after 2013, after his freshman year, but I wasn't completely sold. People were over this for what he could do in 2014, but if you looked at the body of work in his freshman season of 2013, it left something to be desired. 799 rushing yards leading the team, that's great, but 623 of those 799 came in four games. 78% of his yardage came in four games. He had 119 against James. He had 34 yards against Florida State, 27 against Virginia, 1 yard on two carries against Virginia Tech, 28 against Navy, 3 yards against Georgia Tech, 35 against Notre Dame, and 26 against Syracuse, and 22 against Miami. 9 games, and he didn't play in the Old Dominion game, so I guess 8 games. 8 games with 35 yards or less at thrillair.com, and I asked James about it a couple of different times during that offseason and leading into the last season. I said he had something to prove. I wasn't sold yet. And I mean, you remember the hype a lot prior to last season. People were talking about James Conner was going to be not just a great running back, but he was going to play both ways and he's going to do all this. And I said, well, let's hold up for a second. And said he proved a whole lot. 1,765 yards, 25 rushing touchdowns, set a Pitt record for rushing touchdowns. Of course, he only had 7 100-yard games, which was an improvement over the 4 he had the year before. But 3 of those 100-yard games were 200-yard games. And, I forgot until I was looking at some of the numbers this week. The Duke pretty incredible. And then you stop and think about it and you say, wait, Pitt lost both of those games? They had a guy go for 483 and 7 touchdowns in 2 games and they lost both of those games? That just sort of says something about Pitt overall last season. But James Conner was outstanding. I don't think there's any question about it. He had a couple of games, up Pitt at the line of scrimmage. Virginia was kind of a weird game like that, too. Virginia Tech, remember, that was Chad Vojtěch's breakout rushing game where Vojtěch, ran for 118 on 19 carries. And those two guys combined for 35 carries and more than 200 yards rushing, Conner and Vojtěch. But he didn't get as many opportunities in the game, which wasn't too bad. But, you know, it's pretty hard to have any issues with his play last season. He was the ACC Player of the Year, and deservedly so. And this season, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see another 1,600, 1,700-yard performance. But the overall impression that I got from the coaches talking to them this spring, injuries with less carries. I mean, he gets hurt in that Syracuse game, coincidentally or maybe not, right after he had, you know, I talked about the incredible stretch against Duke and Carolina when he had 483 yards and 7 touchdowns in 2 games. We carried the ball 68 times in those 2 games. And then the next week he goes out and he gets hurt against Syracuse. Now, that event A is 68 carries over 2 weeks, and event B is getting hurt the next week. He's a big guy. He takes a lot of shots. His body takes a lot of abuse. Chances are, you know, if you cut those carries in half, instead of 68 carries over 2 weeks, he had 34 carries over 2 weeks. Does that automatically mean he doesn't get hurt against Syracuse? Of a late season injury or an any time in the season injury, if you manage his workload a little better. And that's the impression that you come away with when you talk to Pat Narduzzi, the offensive coordinator Jim Chaney, or the running backs coach Andre Powell. None of them have come out and said it, but you get a pretty clear impression that all three of them, Pitt was irresponsible in using him that much. He is one of the best weapons, though. This is where you have to find the balance, and it's not easy to do so. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they deploy James Conner. We'll talk about some of the other backs as well, because you're going to have to rely on some of those guys, and you're going to have to find out which ones you can year, or he could have a 1,200-yard year and maybe even have a better season than he had, even though the rushing yards are down. Maybe catch more passes. Maybe have a bigger role on third down. And that's another element the coach has talked about a lot, is using Conner more on third down. Over the course of spring camp, you got the impression from these coaches that there were a few things the last staff did that did Vojtěch's mobility as a weapon, rather than just relying on him to escape from trouble when it arises. And then not using Conner as a third down back. Pretty much, it's been made pretty clear by Pat Narduzzi and Jim Chaney and Andre Powell that they think it's a little ridiculous that James Conner came off the field on third down every time. They said that's not good now. Even though, you know, guys like Rashid Ibrahim and Isaac Bennett ran the ball on third down when they would come in as a third down back, it's still, you take something away, you tip your hand a little bit. And so they have some ideas about how they want to use James Conner. And it's almost paradoxical to say it, that they're going to use him less, but then they're also going to use him more. They're going to not pound him quite as much as they did, but they are going to get him in on third downs more and make him a more complete back and give him a broader skill set to work with, because he's talented enough to do it. He's talented enough to catch passes. He's big enough to pick up blitzers. And increasing. So it'll be interesting to see how they use Conner. One thing is, like we talked about right at the start when we began talking about running backs, it's the deepest position on the team. And when you've got Chris James and Quadri Olsen and Rashid Ibrahim behind James Conner, you've got a lot of depth, and you've got talented team. He's strong. It's taken him a little time to, you know, he's still got to kind of grasp the offense. But last season we saw it, you know, you look at his stats from last season on a game-by-game basis, there's not a whole lot that jumps out to you. On the season, 87 carries, 437 yards. That first game against Delaware, he had 14 carries for 77, but then he's got 5 for 20 for Virginia, 2 for 18. Virginia Tech, 5 for 13. Georgia Tech, 7 for 23. You know, Duke, 8 for 30. North Carolina, 4 for 20. Syracuse, Conner gets hurt, and Chris James finally gets his opportunity to really kind of show what he can do, and he goes 19 for 122. He just didn't have a lot of opportunities. And any running back will tell you, and any running James, and the coaches have said this, and the players have said this. I think James Conner said it. Chris James has said it himself. In that early stretch of the season when he was 5 for 20, 5 for 19, 2 for 4, 2 for 18, 5 for 13, 7 for 23, 8 for 30, 4 for 20, and you're only getting 4 carries, 5 carries. We're only getting 4 to 8 carries per game. An effective way to play running back. Not in that kind of offense they were running last year, and probably not the kind of offense they'll run this year. I mean, the way Chris James needed to approach it was to take what was there and pick up 3 or 4 or 5 and pick up 3 or 4 and pick up 3 and pick up 5 and pick up 4, and then you start breaking through a little bit. But he never got enough to carry. He averaged more than 6 yards to carry. 19 for 122 against Syracuse. Those are the kind of opportunities he needs. And I think he can be a really good backup to James Conner, or a complimentary piece to James Conner if you want to cut down on Conner's workload. Chris James is a guy who can do it. Quadri Olsen is also a guy who I think has some real, because I think it was always going to be, I mean, you had Conner, you had Isaac Bennett, you had Rashid Ibrahim, and then it was either going to be Olsen or James. One of those guys was going to get on the field, and I think the competition ended up being closer than the coaches thought it would be. James edged out Olsen, not by a lot. And then this spring, Olsen looked really good. You kept hearing about these long, so you started hearing about these big plays for Quadri Olsen. Those two guys are your main backups, plus Rashid Ibrahim, who is probably going to be perennially disrespected or underappreciated during his time at Pitt, and he's probably never going to get enough opportunities to show what he's capable of. But he's a talented player. He's a talent that give you a pretty strong foundation behind James Conner. And it's because of the strength of those three guys that you should be able to work Conner less, but get more out of him in terms of versatility and flexibility, and get more out of your running game overall because of those three guys. If those three guys live up to what they're – there's finesse, there's a balance, there's a way to operate a committee, and it's not always easy because you do need to let guys get into that rhythm, but you've got enough backs that you shouldn't be killing anybody out there. You shouldn't have any one back carry the ball 68 times in two games, even if he's playing as unbelievably well as James Conner was against Duke and Carolina. Sit up in my notes for this show, and every time I typed it and every time I look at it, I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe it. I saw it. I was there. But 68 for 483 and 7 touchdowns. That's an outstanding performance by a really, really good running back. Really, Connor's the latest in a line, a really good run of great running backs Pitt has had. And this brings us into the past part. We were talking past, present, and future Pitt's running backs here on the Panther Lair Show. It's what we're going to do with each position. And I you know, we say it past, present, and future, but we're going to start with the present because that's what's interesting right now. But the past, I mean, Connor, before him, Ray Graham, before has done his ability. 2011, he was on pace to. He had, what, 963 yards, I think, in eight games. You know, he was well on his way to setting records at Pitt before he tore his ACL. And that doomed him for 2012. And that was the real shame of it. He never really came back from that injury. It's a real shame because he was, I would put him in that category of being a great running back. And when he got hurt, he was on pace. He was tracking toward one of the great seasons in Pitt history for a running back, and then not. And then it all went south. Not very good for running backs. How about this for 2005, Dave Wanstead's first year? Running backs scoring touchdowns. Total touchdowns scored by running backs in 2005. Want to guess how many? I'll tell you. Six. Six total touchdowns by running backs. Tim Murphy scored two. Ray Kirkley had two. Rashad Jennings scored one. And Lerod Stevens-Halling. Greg Lee caught seven touchdowns in 2005. And those other running backs, Murphy, Kirkley, Jennings, and Stevens-Halling, combined for six. That's not very good. That's not very good. And that's not a good stretch. 04, 05, 06. Not a very good stretch for running backs prior to the arrival of LeSean McCoy. But nobody seems to ever really talk about or doesn't get nearly as much pub. And maybe he doesn't deserve, maybe he shouldn't get as much pub as Jordan Whitehead, but should be, in my opinion, right up there, right behind those guys at the very top, right behind Whitehead even, is Darren Hall, four-star running back out of Youngstown, Austintown Fitch High School. I hear nothing but good things. When Powell was the running backs coach at Maryland, he was trying like crazy to recruit Hall to Maryland. And Darren Hall may be a situation where Pitt just got lucky, where a lot of the schools that Hall was looking at kind of filled up on their running back spots, so maybe there weren't opportunities there, or maybe some of his options kind of faded away. He's still an outstanding player, Hall, as they should be. He's a big, powerful back with some good speed to him. Go watch his film online. Go watch it on PantherLair.com or on Huddle or wherever you want to watch it, and watch what he did in his junior season. He's a damn good back, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him get on the field this year. Even though I spent all that time talking about Chris James and Quadri Olson and Rashid Ebenfell. And then elsewhere in the future, I spent a lot of time last week or the week before talking about Miles Sanders, the Woodland Hills running back committed to Penn State. Pitt is still working very hard on him. There were rumors about him decommitting. He claims that didn't happen. I mean, so, okay, that's what it is for now. Pitt's not giving up. He's not going to stop talking to Pitt. They have Olson as a redshirt freshman this year. James is a sophomore this year. You'd like to get a running back in every class. I don't think it needs to be as much of a priority in this year's class, which might be a little bit smaller and has some bigger pressing issues, wide receiver, defensive line in particular. So I think Chris James is going to be really good and have some outstanding moments in his Pitt career. I think Quadri Olson is going to do some good things, and I think Darren Hall can be a stud when he gets to Pitt. So that's the past, present, and future of Pitt's running backs. Next week, we'll stick with the skill positions and start talking about the wide receivers. And that's, we'll try not to make it it's the 2015 opponent preview. And we'll be turning our attention to the Akron Zips and talk to George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal. Talk to him about the Zips, about Terry Bowden, and what he expects out of Akron in year four under Bowden. Beat Pitt last year and finish the season 5-7. So will Akron be better this year? And
got zestier with Dunkin' Donuts' new bacon guacamole flatbread. Enjoy guacamole made from real avocados, tomatoes, cilantro, and lime. It's an exciting blend of flavor spread over an egg, crispy bacon, and cheddar cheese and wrapped in an oven-toasted flatbread. Very limited time offer.
You already know that Invisible Fence Brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom and expert installation 4/7.
Now back to Chris Peek on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
And welcome back to the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio. Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com. And we're joined now by George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal. He covers Akron for the Akron Beacon Journal there, and we're previewing the 2015 opponents. Youngstown State was last week. Previewing Youngstown State, who beat Pitt in 2012 at Heinz Field. That game last year is one that still stings a little bit for Pitt fans, losing to Akron at Heinz Field. That game, when I think back on it, George, I mean, Akron just kind of pushed Pitt around up front on both sides of the ball, but then the team went 5-7. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened to last year's team outside of that game against Pitt?
Couldn't push anybody else around, it seemed at times. They got very inconsistent quarterback play, and part of that is due to starter Kyle Pohl, but part of it isn't his fault, because after that game, and I forget which game it is, it might have become against Marshall, he took a real huge shot to the head and could never really get the running game going after that, believe it or not, because in essence, with Pohl missing those two games, and then playing a redshirt freshman, I believe, who's a redshirt freshman or sophomore in Thomas Woodson, the quarterback play was spotty, and people could basically say, hey.
Trey Chapman, obviously, who started his career for only a few months at Pitt before taking a wayward path and ending up at Akron. And then Thomas Woodson, who you mentioned, local kid here from here in Pittsburgh, who played a bit in that game. Where do you kind of handicap that competition at this point? Is Chapman maybe the favorite? Does Woodson have a shot? Like you said, he didn't really.
In spring camp, the snaps with the first team were split between Trey Chapman and Kyle Pohl. I will say this: it's an even playing field, and you know, and Terry Bowden has mentioned that he could play both of them during the season. Which playing field for your job, and you're a 2-year starter, a 3-year starter already. I'm reading a little bit of writing on the wall there. I don't know what you'd think, but I see a little bit of writing on the wall that says possibly, you know, Trey Chapman, take this job. It's yours if you want it.
How did he look during this?
Of modifying their offense a little bit. They're not abandoning the spread, but they're looking for a little more oomph from the run game, if that makes sense. So they didn't pass a lot, and you couldn't really get a feel for it that way. And they didn't pass a lot in the spring game. They meet on September 5th, if that makes sense to you. It's going to be a big mystery. Honest answer? I don't know.
Well, these coaches really get hung up on that. I've seen that with plenty of Pitt coaches, and I actually had one say to me once, we're not going to do anything on our spring game because Rutgers might be watching. I'm like, really? I mean, maybe. Maybe Greg Schiano's at the time talking about coaches' general paranoia and insecurity. But you talk about maybe a bit more focus on the run game. I thought it was interesting looking at some of the stats from last year, Connor Hundley, Juwan Chisholm, kind of, I don't know, nobody really seemed to jump off the page statistically except for Hundley's game against Pitt when he went for 148 yards on 19 carries. Is he
the lead running back at this point? But Terry has never been shy at about saying he's looking for that big play guy at that position. Hundley is a slasher and a grinder. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have that guy, or I haven't seen that guy, who can go in the back, pad that third gear. Never. But he could get you a 20, 25-yard run. They're still looking for that home run hitter, for lack of a better metaphor or analogy.
Well, you know, on the other side of the ball then, I mean, is the defense going to be a strength of this team? I mean, it seems
that's what they did last year, and that's what they're going to do this year. They've got players that are ready to step in, fill the void of who they lost, and without a roster in front of me, I can't tell you who that is off the top of my head. Look for Savon Pittman. There's a transfer linebacker from Colorado State, Justin March at linebacker. March signed a undrafted free agent contract with the Kansas City Chiefs, so he's had some skills, and he was a leader of the linebacking core. The defense shouldn't be the problem. The offense is what they'll be waiting for, I believe.
How much of a, obviously, court kind of general feeling around Akron about the Zips at this point?
you're assuming that the Zips generate buzz in town. That's not the case.
Oh, I'm not assuming. I'm asking you if they do.
No. Here it is. This, and if a Zips fan with a football program, there's Ohio State and there's everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality. Until the Zips consistently win 9, 8, 9, 10 games, I don't think you're going to see the enthusiasm. Where you attended school, I'm assuming Pitt.
Yeah.
But, and mind you, I went to Ohio State for a few of my years in college.
Mm-hmm.
School spirit, athletically, was always something you took pride in, I assume. You don't see that small but vocal. There are expectations. I just can't qualify the level of expectations. I've never seen it really there with the students. I've seen it more there with the alumni. That's
Does the attendance reflect some of that support, like you said, though?
It's empty. The stadium is like two-thirds empty every Saturday.
Hmm.
I mean, you're absolutely right. It's a wonderful facility. At the time it was built, it was state-of-the-art. They have a the facilities aren't lacking. The support from the student body and the city in general is.
Is it, I mean, just with the way college athletics are going, with the way college football is going and the separations with UAMB, but if there's a program now, it seems like they've made recent investments in the program, so maybe it wouldn't be something that would ever cross their minds. But I always wonder when we saw with UAB contracting the football program, if more programs would follow that model. Do you think that's something that, I mean, from everything you're describing about support and all of that, do you think that's something that Akron would
have? That happening. But let's face it. You're trying to figure out what side Pitt's going to come out on.
Yeah.
Essentially, when the bottom five conferences gave the Power Five autonomy last fall, they basically said, hey, here, we'll take your table scraps. That's what they said.
Yeah.
I mean, they pray that they don't get injured. And come home with a big check for the program. My perception is those lower five conferences are just hoping that doesn't go away. And I don't know if you remember reading anything after autonomy passed last fall where some of those Power Five coaches, those lesser conferences are cut out of the contract. There's a bigger piece of pie for everybody else.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. And I mean, from a Pitt perspective, I mean, my concern always with autonomy was, okay, so right now you've got this separation that's existed between Power Five and Group of Five. Well, you know, if you go further down this road, eventually, why is Pitt, why is Boston College getting some of it? You know what I mean? That it's, this is what made me nervous about autonomy from the start is it's never going to be the last cut. There's always going to be another cut between haves and have-nots, and you know, makes me nervous at least. I think Pitt would like to think of themselves as being part of the haves in the Power Five, but they're close
along. The MAC as a conference, it's a basketball conference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but let's face it, reality in college athletics, where's most of the money?
Yeah.
In football. So I get it, but I don't know how reality is going to play out a decade from now.
Yeah.
So,
to what we were originally talking about, Pitt and Akron playing football. Year four for Terry Bowden, couple of 5-7 seasons. I think he's got, 11 wins over the last 3 years. Is some pressure building? Does he need to reach a new level of success this year to kind of keep everybody happy heading into year five after this?
Much of coaching, but I really think that alumni, et cetera, would like to see 2 to 3 more wins this season to show progress. And this is really, with this being his fourth season, this is his first recruiter goes. All I can say is that's a Bowden.
Yeah.
And he's a proven Bowden, too.
Right.
So, that's a thin line. Let's try that.
All right, George. Well, thanks so much for your time. In Akron on September 12th this fall.
Oh, I guarantee you'll see me.
All right. Thanks a lot, George.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. That's George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal. He covers the Zips for the Beacon Journal. And, you hate to, how do you ask somebody, hey, is that school going to contract their football program? But, I mean, really, when you hear him describe to contract the program, but at a certain point, if you're just hemorrhaging money, now, like he said, they're going to go down to Oklahoma to open the season. They're going to get their brains beat in, and they're going to come home with a fat check and hope they don't get injured. But is that any way to run a football program? Is that a goal for a football program that you're going to play within your conference and it's not going to matter who wins because you're not going to go to any of the big bowl, rate that, and then you're going to play some games against some big opponents. You're going to go on the road and get crushed a few times a year. Now, is that any different than what it was 5 years ago? Probably not. I mean, the equation hasn't changed all that much. Now it's in paper. It's in writing that you have no chance to get the gold ring. You're no chance. Whereas in the past, it was just assumed you had no chance. But, yeah, I mean, after UAB decided to cancel football, and then they talk about bringing it back, which would be even more idiotic than canceling it in the first place. You've sapped any potential energy you had in your program, and now you're going to bring it back and start over? That's ridiculous. But start cutting your expenses. Start cutting full scholarships. Go half scholarship or partial, like some of the Division II schools do, that's what college sports is coming to. And like I said to George, I mean, you can all be happy that Pitt's in the ACC and in the Power 5 Conference with autonomy and all of that, but because when you make that next split, Pitt, you're not necessarily in that haves and have-nots, just in terms of resources and in terms of everything that that we talk about with college programs. You're closer to Boston College in Minnesota than you are to Florida State and Clemson at this point in Alabama. And you know what? You're in the majority with autonomy from the very start. That it wouldn't be the last split. It wouldn't be the last cut. Anyway, thanks to George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal for joining us. It was great to talk to him, get some insight into Akron football. And it's going to be an interesting program to watch, an interesting team to watch. If Pitt can go out there and get that win, if they can open the season against Youngstown State and win, and it should be there for them to do. Akron's strength is going to be defense. Pitt's strength is going to be offense. Last year, Akron won that battle. I don't think it'll happen 2 years in a row. I think Pitt's strength, offense, will be able to beat out Akron's strength, which is defense. We'll find out on September 12th, a week after they host Youngstown State on September 5th. And breaking down that position, past, present, and future, and then turning our focus to the Hawkeyes. Talked to some people from the IowaRivals.com site. They will give some insight on Iowa football, what to expect as Pitt goes to Iowa on September 19th. We'll continue our position preview series, our 2015 opponent preview series. Good stuff as always. We'll continue on iTunes, anywhere you want to get it. Follow me on Twitter at PantherLair, PantherLair. Until next week, we'll see you on the message boards. It's the Panther Lair Show here on Triple Live Radio.